Good evening. This is Mae Brussel in Carmel, California. It's broadcast number 508, and it's August the 30th, 1981. There's an interesting article in the newspaper this week I just thought I'd mention before I get on to some heavier material. One was the United States was accused of lying regarding the North Korea flights and firing the missiles. From Tokyo, North Korea today said that the United States was lying about who fired at the United States airplanes, and the United States was officially lying that this was an espionage act on the part of the United States, in quotes, to aggravate tension and start a new war in Korea. Well, that was August the 30th, and one day later there was an article in the newspaper, August 28th, and 2 days later, Barry Goldwater said, this was the Sunday paper, Associated Press, Barry Goldwater doubts the Korea firing story. Senator Barry Goldwater said he's not sure if he believes the Defense Department report that North Korea fired a surface-to-air missile at a U.S. reconnaissance plane. I doubt if North Korea tried it. That's interesting because Barry Goldwater has a military commission. He's been close to the military. What he is, in fact, saying is that he thinks the United States Defense Department is lying, and this is a clear demarcation from people accepting at face value everything that the United States Defense Department says. It can be that many people are really afraid of Alexander Haig and Caspar Weinberger and the fact that these people, as accused by Jimmy Carter as being warmongers, really trying to provoke a lot of problems all over the world. Obviously, they are when I list off some of the countries, but Goldwater said he believes North Korea in this case and doesn't believe the Defense Department. One small article, a suggestion from Springfield, Illinois, by a Senate Republican counsel, Philip Weber. He has a solution to the prison problem. You know, our prisons are getting overcrowded, and Ronald Reagan wants several billion dollars to build new prisons, and be careful of Reagan's prisons. One evening, I'll do a complete broadcast, if I can do it in one evening, on Ronald Reagan and California prisons. Well, a Senate Republican from Springfield suggests that prisoners should have two choices. One, put them in a coma and stop a potential danger to society. Or two, shave their heads and eyebrows, identify them with day-glow orange uniforms, and put them at work out in the community, bring them home at night. Either let them be sleeping quietly or put them to work, and that would solve the problem. Another article in the San Francisco Examiner today, August 30th, the divers search for 71 million Russian gold. I mentioned several weeks ago the missing gold and the sunken ships with this large amount of gold on it since last October, when this attempt to bring the ship up was first published in the newspapers. It was worth about 20 million less. The value has gone up from 51 to 71 million. And there also is an article this week, the Andrea Doria, that I spoke about on various programs, the Italian ship that went down with money from the Bank of Rome. There's from $1 to $4 million, and they brought up the safe and got into the bank. They knew exactly where to go and brought that up this last week. For those of you who collect memorabilia, you can order a tape cassette of the shooting of John Paul II, starting within minutes after his shooting, 5 minutes after the Pope was shot at St. Peter's Square. And the tape recording goes through the description of his operation and medical treatments. And then it gives the prayer where he praises and forgives his would-be assassin. If you want those cassettes, they're $3.50 from the Office of Propaganda, ESVILUPPO. Can't pronounce it. Vatican Radio Station, Vatican City, Italy. I've collected various items through the years having to do with political assassinations and memorabilia, and they become amazingly valuable later. For $3.50, you can get the Pope shooting, the medical descriptions, the rearrangement of his colon, his bowel, his blood pressure, and so forth, and then the prayer of forgiveness. The Italian newspaper announced this week, the Associated Press, that even though the man who has been charged with shooting the Pope is now in prison, Mehmet Aghi, they're looking for an accomplice in the Pope shooting. Italian justice works swiftly there as compared to the United States. John Hinckley Jr. was just arraigned this week and charged with shooting Ronald Reagan and the others in Washington, D.C. that I'll go into. But even though they have a man in prison for shooting the Pope, they are looking for accomplices, and they don't settle so easily. There was every reason to believe that John Hinckley Jr. had friends or a second gunman that was photographed at the balcony, and I'll go more into that in a few weeks, the subject of the more evidence on the conspiracy to shoot Ronald Reagan. But in Italy, they don't settle so easy, and they're going for the other people who assisted in placing this person at St. Peter's Square and providing him with money until the Pope was shot. I will do a few more weeks. I'll get caught up on the Larry Layton trial, the conspiracy to kill a federal agent, Mr. Dwyer, at the airport in Guyana, and also the shooting of Representative Ryan at the airport. The important thing about this trial of Larry Layton on the conspiracy in Guyana is to blame all of the bloodshed for over 900 people who died on Jim Jones. It is similar to the end of World War II to blame Adolf Hitler for Germany's problems or Mussolini for Italy's problems. The headline stories read such as one big story in the paper this morning, the maverick and the martyr. The maverick being Jim Jones and the martyr being Representative Leo Ryan. What they fail to tell you when they refer to him as a martyr, they refer to Ryan as a do-gooder who got caught in the hands of the beast and went down there to help some people. They overpass always the famous Hughes Ryan bill, which is being overturned by the CIA and Ronald Reagan. Leo Ryan was the man who put the muscles into stopping CIA covert action. He got access to information about CIA activity in Angola coming out of Guyana. He was aware of improprieties of the CIA, and he was a man who wanted to stop the power of the CIA. And he was, in fact, a martyr, but not just for simplistic reasons in Jonestown, but because he bucked up against the Central Intelligence Agency. One of the articles covering the Larry Layton trial in the Chronicle has the lead topic, Layton trial told of Jones' brutal control. And this is how Jim Jones was so cruel to people. And another article, Layton used two drugs at the time of the airport ambush. What's wrong with these articles? Well, for one thing, Jim Jones had brutal control, but men like Mark Lane and Charles Gary and Tim Stone, an attorney from Stanford, and Stanford doctors like Dr. Godlett or a doctor from Westchester, white lawyers, American lawyers, were part of a system of concentration activity, of drugging, of whipping, of rattlesnakes, of terror, of false burials, of terrorizing children, of beatings, working all day, inferior food, white upper echelon getting fair food, and the workers working 12 hours a day and listening to ranting lectures in the evening. The white entourage that set up Jonestown, the banks that set it up, that knew of the difference between right and wrong and fairness, were selling Jonestown to the last drop of blood. Mark Lane was on the radio in October before the deaths came down, telling people from KGO how glorious it was. And the lawyers were the ones, I believe, who were responsible. Start with the lawyers and the doctors, because those are the people that have graduated from our colleges, from our medical system, our law schools. They're responsible for these deaths, not Jim Jones. He himself was drugged. And the tragedy is that the blame isn't put on the doctors and lawyers and the San Francisco police or the San Francisco echelon of politics who set up this activity, or the Los Angeles police, or the people from the Justice Department in Sacramento who are in power today. The entire trial is to show the madness of Jim Jones and not the people who are alive and profiting from it today, writing books and articles and so forth. Now, about the Reagan incident and shooting in Washington, D.C., many reports are coming out these last few weeks that one of them from the Houston Post, glaring gaps cited in presidential protection. Now, what do they do when there were gaps in the president's security? Do they fire anybody? No, they promote them. All they say is we need more money for protection because there are gaps, and yet they refuse to go into the background of Hinckley or who in the Secret Service told John Hinckley where to be, who he met at the hotel where Secret Service agents stay directly across the street from the Secret Service. another government involvement, which is dangerous. Came out this last week, an article, Missing Link in Ronald Reagan Attack. The Washington News Bureau says that Ronald Reagan's shirt, his tie, his cufflinks were lost in the hospital, and the FBI is looking for them. The items came out missing at George Washington Hospital, the University Hospital emergency room, after the FBI sealed it and after Reagan's admission, they had kept it secret that his clothes were missing. If he was in the emergency room, they went through the trash, and they looked in the intensive care unit, and they cannot account for the president's shirt, his cufflinks, or his tie. Now, these are important items because, remember, the bullet was supposed to have come from where John Hinckley was standing in front of the hotel in Washington, D.C. Then a later report say it ricocheted off of a car, which was like 45 degrees different than where John Hinckley was standing, and entered Ronald Reagan. Then there was a discrepancy of how the bullet entered, and now the clothing was taken out of the surgery room, the intensive care. This happened identically in the John Kennedy assassination and the Robert Kennedy assassination. When the security guard shot Robert Kennedy from in back of Robert Kennedy, Thane Caesar, an inch from the back of the head and fell to the ground, the fabrics of his clothing would show the trajectory of the bullet. But not only were the ceiling panels removed, but the sleeve of the shirt and coat that Robert Kennedy wore was cut off in either the morgue or the room where they took his body. They cut the sleeve off, and to this day, it has never been seen. And it could show the direction of bullets that went from the backward to the front that did not enter from Sirhan's gun that was in front of Robert Kennedy, because none of Sirhan's bullets got into his body. So how could a shirt and sleeve, as well as Sirhan's gun, was disposed of right away in the ceiling panels? But in the case of the John Kennedy assassination, John Connally's clothing were put in a paper bag and given to Senator Yarbrough, and they were sent to the dry cleaner in Washington, D.C., and they were of no value to the FBI before the Warren Commission, when the FBI agents and the doctors disclaimed the official version of the way John Kennedy was killed, or John Connally, the governor of Texas, was shot. They said, bring in the clothing. And they said, well, the clothing were dry cleaned and have no value. So here again is a missing link in Ronald Reagan's attack, where the clothing were taken out of the emergency room. They looked in the trash, the intensive care. They can't find the shirt, never mind the cufflinks or the tie, unless there were extra holes in them that were used with silencers, because I feel there was somebody inside the car, and when Ronald Reagan was facing that car, he could have received bullets from a silencer. He blamed the Secret Service for jumping on him, that he was really injured or hurt when he got into the car. And it would be interesting to find the clothing, and I think it's outrageous that they can't account for the clothing. John Hinckley Jr. has been arraigned this week. Finally, he won't go to trial until November, December. According to the Los Angeles Times stories, he's asked to be released on bail. He pleads he's innocent. And in the meanwhile, Mr. Brady has had more surgery, James Brady, one of the people that John Hinckley Jr. shot. And according to the New York Times, he was coherent and chattering away. Another report said that he had a birthday this week. And according to the accounts of the Los Angeles Times and a newspaper out of Santa Barbara, Associated Press, Brady has the biggest grin on his face you ever saw. His wife said on a long-distance telephone, well, forget the grin. Let's hear if the guy is talking. We know he's grinning. He's grinning from ear to ear, but let's see if there's anything between his ears, if the guy can even talk. It's disgusting that Hinckley wants to be out walking the streets from November, December. We don't even know if I believe that Brady is jabbling and chattering, but what else is he doing, and how long does this charade go on? Another item on the ruling on Dennis McNeil, the brother of the famous McNeil brothers, who was suggested to have been murdered June the 1st. Of course, the New York City involvement, Dr. Elliot Gross from the New York City Coroner's Office, did an autopsy on this poor corpse and declared as of 2 days ago that it actually was not murder, that he wasn't murdered. The man had been taken and beaten up. He could have had a broken, he broken spleen, which they were going to operate on. Doctors in Chicago said that if he ruptured a spleen and attacked somebody, it still may not show for 5 or 6 weeks. The two brothers have gone, but it's interesting that the New York City coroner, according to an article in the Associated Press, August the 28th, 1981, said the New York authorities, who originally refused to perform the autopsy, now are going up to Augusta, Maine to do the autopsy. Now, Dr. Elliot Gross would go to Augusta, Maine from New York City. Elliot Gross works with the CIA. Dr. Bodden, who preceded him in the New York autopsy offices, was with the CIA. These are the same creeps that said there could be no autopsy on Nelson Rockefeller to find out if he was poisoned in that mysterious death that made way for Ronald Reagan's presidency. This is a situation that just stinks to high heaven, and I'm sure the case isn't over. Even though they had a death ruling on the man, shows autopsy done, no foul play, I don't believe it for a minute. There was a long article in the New York Daily News, July 29th, FBI investigates the mystery death in the CIA case, and it tells about tape recordings and conversations of Max Ugel, a man that William Casey had put into the CIA's most controversial position. And Ugel had a warning to the McNeils to cool it, and there were literally what tantamount to death threats on tape recordings. And one of the McNeil lawyers heard Ugel say, "I'll kill the bastard," referring to the McNeils. And Ugel also said that Thomas McNeil, one of the brothers, would be found hurt if a certain loan he had wasn't repaid. There was talk of killing, there was talk of hurting, and there was suggestion that this particular brother, Dennis, was punched in and kidnapped in order to keep quiet about future operations. And he kept quiet, according to his wife. But this story is not over yet, and there's a lot more to go on this story. The New York newspapers and others have had links of Max Ugel and William J. Casey to controversial matters, the most controversial, of course, being the links to Bobby Vesco and organized crime and the power that Vesco has. Max Ugel was a very important person, probably in his business ventures in Japan for many, many years before he got the important post as head of counterintelligence. But even though they brought this poor body up, the same person who refused to do the autopsy in the first place goes up to Augusta, Maine, and does the second. So how he's covering his bases second time, how do you expect a disinterested or an honest autopsy? In other words, they say, well, if we're going to have an autopsy that we wouldn't let you have the first time, then we're going to be there to do it the second time. That isn't fair. Why not let the doctors in Augusta, Maine do it? And because it involves Max Ugel and the McNeil brothers and William Casey of the CIA, and we know the CIA's proclivity for murders and cover-up, it seems to me that no CIA doctor or anyone affiliated with New York City should be involved, especially the track record of the New York coroner's office. There's an article out of the United Press this week that just took a little bit of space, and this has to do with Mr. William Casey. And I think it's important to go into it apropos of those kinds of mysterious operations. This article is titled CIA Chief's Big Time Clients. And it says that when William Casey went before the Senate Intelligence Committee for a confirmation hearing, he gave them a revised list of his 117 legal clients, but he cited at that time only 43 clients at the time of the hearing. It was turned over to the committee by Casey's former New York firm of Rogers and Wells. Rogers is the former government official who represented the Shah of Iran. An earlier list that Casey submitted for his January confirmation hearing cited only 43 clients from 2 years before his CIA nomination. So he has a revised list where he's giving them 9 more clients this last week to update because he's under fire for some of his mysterious connections. Well, who do you think the clients are? I'll list you the 8 that are in the newspaper, and let's guess about who the 109 are. Okay, one of them was ITT and the other is Robert Vesco. So who are the 107? One is the government of South Korea. Now, you know the hanky-panky with the Korea Gate problem, the paying off of our entire Congress, fixing them up with prostitutes, double dealing, the coup in South Korea where the current president offed his successor at a dinner table, killed him, and became the head of South Korea. I did a few weeks ago the problem of former Congressman Robert Leggett, who's now married to Susie Parks, who set up a big Korea Gate scam and mentioned his questionable maritime oceanic connections in Hawaii and otherwise. There's the Reverend Moon with the Nazi connections in South Korea and the congressional blackmail. He's the attorney for South Korea. Another company that he represents listed here is the Saudi Arabian Lines. Well, is that a travel agency? What are the Saudi Arabian Lines? Because the Nguyen Han Bank, remember the travel agencies with their big headquarters, one of their 16 headquarters was in Saudi Arabia. Our CIA director is the attorney for the Saudi Arabian Lines. Is this a CIA dummy front? What are its connections to a lot of operations going on in the world? And is this director of the CIA simply a grandmaster outside of Edward Bennett Williams for holding his finger in the cookie jars of these huge clandestine operations while he's the attorney for them? Imagine what kind of a double standard that is. It's similar to Alan Dulles being the attorney for so many huge corporations in New York City and being director of the CIA at the same time. And we saw the catastrophe of what he left us in terms of foreign policy and mangled concessions with his various Nazi organized crime connections. Another client is the Associated Press. Well, isn't that cozy to have the CIA director with the Associated Press as his client? At the time of the Warren Commission hearings, when Earl Warren was having trouble with the news media breaking leaks about conspiracies to kill John Kennedy that they were supposed to cover up, he said at the minutes of the meeting, let's call in the president of the Associated Press, the United Press, and we'll handle those rumors. Well, William Casey of the CIA has a client, the Associated Press. Also listed in this article, he has a newspaper out in Long Island that's one of his business dealings, the CIA director having a newspaper. Now, here's a juicy client, if there ever was one, and we'll have to do maybe a whole evening on that. That's Caesar's World out in Las Vegas with their interlocking connections in Atlantic City. Any conspiratorial-minded person would really lick their chops at this one. This involves Frank Sinatra, just got on the board. But at the time of the Harold Smith arrest and the scandal of the Wells Fargo, $200 or $300 million at linked into Caesar's World and to international connections of boxing, sports, organized crime, and the intelligence community and interweaving that would take just an evening alone on that. Each one of these our CIA director has as a client. Keep in mind, as I said, I'm talking about eight clients. Can you imagine doing 2 years, 1 hour a week of the clients of William Casey? That would take 2 years to do a interlocking. Another one is singer Connie Francis. I have to look up. There was a scandal of her and a rape and her brother with organized crime and early connecting links to questionable characters. I have a lot on Connie Francis, but it wasn't at hand when I came in this week. Another client is New York City and Nassau suburb. Well, I think of Dr. Bodden and Dr. Gross from the Nelson Rockefeller or the McNell autopsy. If our CIA director is the attorney for New York City and they send their coroner to go up to look into a murder that might involve the CIA director, that's a little crummy too. I don't see how he represents the New York City and Nassau County and sends employees of the city of New York to cover the exhuming of a body that involves his contacts and appointments as a, like Max Ugel, for a secret operation. Another interesting client is the Bank of Paris. I have a French connection to the Italian scandal, the Ronald Reagan scandal that I don't have time for this week that I'll do next week, but keep in mind William Casey as an attorney for the Bank of Paris. And then another interesting one is the government of Indonesia. He's the attorney. These are holdings or business operations that he kept from the Intelligence Committee when he was confirmed for the director of CIA. The government of Indonesia as well as South Korea. And then a Pertamina Indonesia state-owned oil company. Can you imagine a list of information that he held back from his confirmation hearings, a revised list of his 117 clients, and at the time he gave the name of 43 clients. Well, you can take Indonesian foreign policy, or what Mr. Haig or Weinberger will do in Indonesia, or how many troops we need in Indonesia. When we have a foreign policy there, or keep a dictator in, is to protect the oil investments of Mr. Casey's clients, or is it to protect United States security? It became perfectly obvious to me years ago that the whole purpose of the CIA was to make countries safe for the investment of particular corporations, that this is the private police force of various corporations, nothing less, and that the people that we send in to overthrow Guatemala or El Salvador or Chile or Brazil have to do with not what the world thinks of us or what will bring peace or what will be best for the most amount of people. It simply has to do with how will the corporations get the most profit by what we do in these countries. And when you look at the CIA's role in that light, you'll realize why we're involved in so many dirty anti-democratic operations, starting, say, with the overthrow of Mossadegh in Iran, or the overthrow of the government of Guatemala for United Fruit, and on down to those 77 military dictatorships we put into power. The whole purpose was to take the natural resources and put them in the hands of the corporations and make sure that our counter-espionage operations infiltrated camping grounds, restaurants, health food stores, such as the Christopher Boyce arrest, whether you're selling jogging shoes or telephone companies or whatever, occupations, infiltrating every level, the press, the labor movement, every organization, to make sure that you save the world for the corporations. Well, that's William Casey, and there'll be more about this autopsy later. And I'm sure that that McNeil brother, Dennis, didn't just happen to be jogging one morning and came in and went to the hospital and died prior to an operation on his spleen. I got an article this week from somebody, the newspaper In These Times. It comes out of Chicago, and I really should subscribe to it. I don't, and I get various clippings. This is the August 12th issue of 1981, a section in this world, and it has more to do, again, on the P2 Italian scandal. Those of you who have been following it may think that I've lost track of those pieces. I've just put it aside temporarily because there's been so many news stories that I thought should take precedence to it. But we'll get back some more to Licio Gelli. Licio Gelli is the Italian fascist who worked with Franco in Spain, with Hitler, and with Mussolini, and Perón in Argentina, and went back in Italy, setting up fascist organizations and Nazi organizations to overthrow the government. And his Christian Democratic Party there was funded by the CIA to make sure that the world was safe for fascism in Italy. Licio Gelli is still not available. He's either in Argentina or Uruguay. And this article, In These Times, if you can get it, is some more information that I will update. I want you to know that I have not put it aside. In this article, there is a picture of a group of people being taken away, terrorists. And the important thing about this article and the many that I've talked about is, in quotes, there is suspicion that intelligence officials have manipulated the right and the left, and terrorism in Italy that is widespread is controlled by the right and left, is controlled by the fascist organizations. The people with Nazi leanings, secret death squads that massacre, that kill, that kidnap, are doing these operations in the name of the left, and that there is no difference. Now, when I wrote The SLA is the CIA in 1974 and went into great detail on the kidnapping of Patty Hearst and the use of the United States government, the CIA, Colston Westbrook from Southeast Asia, the mind control projects they were testing, Evel Younger, our district attorney from LA, who went on to become the attorney general, when I did a detailed 30 or 40 page article in The Realist on the right and left being caused by the right, there are only about 8 or 10 researchers in the United States that caught on to what I was trying to say. And it takes a major scandal in Italy for people to begin to realize that people like Licio Gelli and the hundreds of people named by the secret organizations that he belonged to have created the terrorism that looks like the left as excuse to make the left look bad and for them to get more police and hurry on the fascism that they've planned all along. Now, this is the end of the first 30 minutes. We'll take a one-minute break, and then when we get back, I'm going to do mostly the next 30 minutes on Libya, Gaddafi, and the CIA and terrorism at that level.
This concludes the first half of World Watchers International with Mae Brussel. We will return with the second